When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw, your October 28th edition. John Pollock and Wei Ting. Wei, I know you had a great weekend, so we're just going to jump into the present. How are you doing this second, this moment, as soon as we went live?
Okay.
You don't seem to be too jolly.
Like in general?
No, just in this moment.
In this moment. I've been better. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I won't pry. I hope that I can put a smile on your face by the end of tonight.
You already have. Look at
have
this.
Have I?
Yeah, just with this interaction. Yes, of course. How are you, John?
You know, I'm great. I'm doing well. It's the end of October. I'm doing good. Yeah. No, I don't have much.
Does the end of October have something to do with you being in a better mood?
No, not really. Not at all, to be quite honest. I like this time of the year, to be quite honest. No snow.
Yeah.
Not a super fan of the heat in the summer. So fall has always been a favorable season for me. I like this in-between season.
I kind of agree. It might be my favorite season. I mean,
I think so too.
I think
it's a very low-key one. No one ever says the fall. I love the fall.
Well, it's because, like, you know, I think we've been conditioned through childhood to hate the end of summer and the start of fall because it means the start of school. But I mean, as an adult, I like it. It's nice. It's nice.
I have to interrupt our usual format, Wei, because I go back to our last edition of Ask Away, and one of our submitted audio questions was the impact of AI and what it's going to have on our futures. And I wonder if there will be a day when Wei is not feeling so jolly come 10:05 p.m. And he says, you know what? I'm mailing this one in. And that would be very concerning if I were to get a text 2 minutes before the show saying, you know what? Let's just leave it to AI to do. Are we there yet? Is the technology ready for you and I to just simply sit back and let others take over for us? And one of our listeners put this to the test. And we're going to play everyone a sample of reviewers reviewing us. And let's see where is that technology when it comes to two hosts randomly reviewing myself and Wei Ting. Here's a couple of minutes of that.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We're trying something a little different today. We're going to kind of analyze the analyzers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so we're going to be looking at John Pollock and Wei Ting from Post Wrestling.
Okay.
And they did a video reacting to the Vince McMahon documentary on Netflix.
Oh, cool.
Right after they watched it, all 6 hours.
Wow.
All in one go.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of Vince.
So we thought it'd be interesting to kind of go through and see what were their immediate reactions? You know, what stood out to them?
Hmm.
And see if we could learn anything about their approach.
Yeah.
You know, as wrestling journalists.
Yeah. I'm really curious about that because it is a tricky thing, right? Like, obviously, they're huge wrestling fans.
Right.
But they're also journalists who are supposed to be objective and critical.
Totally. And especially with a figure like Vince McMahon, who's so polarizing.
Exactly. So how do you balance that fandom with that journalistic integrity?
Right. So let's dive in. Yeah. John right away says he's still processing everything. Like, he was just so much information.
I bet. 6 hours is a long time.
Yeah. And he even mentions he's doing another deep dive with other wrestling personalities to really unpack it all.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, me too. But Wei Ting immediately picks up on something really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He says the documentary feels edited, like there are pieces missing.
Mm.
And they both kind of speculate that it's because of those serious allegations against McMahon.
Oh, right. Those came out while they were making the documentary, didn't they?
Yeah, so they think maybe some stuff got cut or changed because of that.
That makes sense. That's a good catch on their part.
Yeah, it shows they're really thinking critically about it.
Totally. Not just passively watching.
Exactly. They're considering the whole context of how it was made.
The process, not just the product.
Exactly. But, you know, they do appreciate the craft of it.
Yeah.
John actually praises the editing in some parts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the use of all that archival footage. He says gives you these little glimpses into Vince's world.
Which is rare. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't often see that side of things.
I always find that stuff fascinating.
Me too.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where is that on a scale of one to really confusing at some point? I'd say like we're passing like a 5 out of 10 at this point where it comes to this technology.
Like really convincing, you mean?
Like where on the grand scope of where you expect, what do you expect that to sound like 2 years from now?
So I already think it sounds really good. Like I know that was AI because I got the email as well and I had already listened to it. I had also heard these particular AI podcasters. The first time I heard about them actually was a clip of them reacting to themselves finding out that they are AI and that
Cool. I'm going to have to check that out. Totally.
Well, they're having a tough time dealing with it actually.
Oh, that's really tough to.
But here I am like speaking on a podcast and I'm doing like ums and ahs and I'm realizing, well, okay, like these are things that are like, I guess programmable, you know, like like me stammering right now is something that is going to be replicated by AI probably already at this moment. So listen, I'm trying to say if I didn't know that that was AI, I would have been convinced that they were just real people.
Okay. I think that there is a
what you could tell.
I think so. I think that after
bullshit, no way.
I all that is to say is that 18 months from now, I think I will be completely just given up to this. It's a frightening world that we're heading toward. But they seem very complimentary. I took issue with a little of her critiques later in the review, but overall it was a fair review of our review of a review.
So that was from a listener named Ian who decided to create that for us using Notebook LM. All right. So, yeah, I don't know if you want to go make
your
own.
You don't have to promote these people. I mean, they're of no value to us. But they're
They provided some really interesting content. Why not? You know, cite our sources, right? We don't know what he used to prompt it. He could have said, "Hey, create a really glowing review of John Pollock and Wei Ting's work." But maybe not. Maybe he just simply wrote review John Pollock and Wei Ting's work from post wrestling, and that's what AI dug up. It was pretty accurate for the most part. Well, at least like just like the pronunciations, they got my name right.
Most of them until they got to the
Well, that's what I mean. Like you know, it got like it didn't say Wei Ting, didn't call you Pollock.
That's true. They did get our pronunciations
but
accurate.
But it did start like surprise me when they got to the Chris Benoit scandal. Yeah. And they frequently, like, it was funny hearing these guys, like, sound very articulate. And then they just kept saying Benoit. So that you know, it's like 99% of the way there.
Well, there you have it, everybody. That is a review of our review of the Vince McMahon series. I found it entertaining, to say the least. Did you get up to any viewing of wrestling over the weekend?
Yeah, I watched Halloween Havoc. Yeah.
Okay, we will talk about that momentarily, but we have
and
to
Collision,
start off.
Of course. Yeah.
Yes, you reviewed Collision as well, but first we have a slew of injuries that went that happened over the weekend. So, starting off, there were two injuries at the TNA tapings on Sunday. The most serious appears to be Chris Bay, who. Both him and El Hijo del Vikingo, who were in separate matches at the taping Sunday in Detroit, were taken to hospital, and Chris Bay had to undergo emergency surgery. This is believed to be a neck injury that he sustained, obviously very, very significant, and you can get the sense from just the amount of outpouring from talent that are on the roster. It seems a lot of concern about Chris Bay, and we don't have too many additional details beyond he did undergo surgery. But of course, when you're talking about the neck, it is very, very concerning.
Oh, very. Yeah. It's never good to hear about. We're kind of in this awkward space now where like we know a significant injury has taken place, but we don't exactly know what's happened. So all we could do is send our well wishes, and as many people in pro wrestling have right now.
El Hijo del and Chris Bay with his partner Ace Austin, they were in the midst of a match with the Hardys. This is when, and the match was called off and ended. And then El Hijo del Vikingo was involved in a match with Trent Seven and did like a springboard, like sky twister press to the floor. And there has been video of this circulating, and he just comes down badly on his leg and immediately goes down and is favoring it. So it's been described as a leg injury. Of course, he had been out earlier this year from February just up until about a month ago with a knee injury. He has posted and just seemed to be at least in good spirits with what he posted. But again, to be determined how long he could be out of action, if at all, depending on how severe it is. Also want to make mention the fact that on Friday's CMLL card at Arena Mexico, Willow Nightingale was in the Grand Prix in the main event and suffered a concussion and then missed the rest of her dates over the weekend. And Session Moth Martina was on the OTT show. And I had this described to me was that she was wrestling Raven Creed, and they were by the stage, and she was to take a powerbomb through the table, and then her head smashed against the stage when she overshot the table, and then was transported to hospital. And then she commented on the injury. She posted a photo where her head is wrapped at the hospital and called it, quote, a significant head injury, which is very, very concerning, adding that she is going to be out of action for a while. And yeah, this was OTT's big 10th anniversary show in Dublin. Jordan Devlin and Finn Balor were also on that show in the main event. It was a very, very big show for OTT. One person had told me like there were like 2,200 people at this show. But yeah, just a ton of injuries this weekend, and hopefully none of them too severe. But, you know, when you're talking about head, neck, these are significant, obviously.
This is a very risky physical activity.
It is indeed. One other note before we get to Halloween Havoc, do want to pass our condolences to Wendy Barlow, whose son died, unfortunately, taking his life on Saturday, only 24 years of age. He was a musician. You may have remembered he was doing some media when he first put out. He put out some songs a few years ago and then put out an actual album this past summer. I know he did Nick Houseman's show a few years ago. Obviously, just very, very tragic. And of course, Ric Flair, who married Wendy Barlow over a decade ago. So obviously very, very close with Sebastian Kidder, and of course, had lost his own son in 2013. Just horrible news here. And yeah, TMZ reporting it. Wendy Barlow did provide a statement and just, you know, pretty much sharing, you know, of awareness regarding mental health. This is a very, very sad story when you are losing a child. So
Ric Flair as well has posted a lengthy statement.
Yeah, he posted a lengthy statement and then a follow up too as well afterwards, thanking everyone for all of the support they've received over the past 24-48 hours. He died on Saturday, again, very young at 24. So there you have it. Unfortunate news to start off this show. On a lighter note, we had Halloween Havoc on Sunday at the Giant Center, which is also where Raw was tonight in Hershey, Pennsylvania, just over 5,000 in attendance. And first of all, Wei, what did you think about the lineup going in? And yeah, just in terms of this being an NXT premium live event and the interest you had watching on the weekend.
Yeah, this particular show I felt like was a bit of a decrease in interest even compared to, you know, maybe some of the TV specials that they've had recently. I think I was more so watching because, you know, of the standard that I think even this version of NXT has set for its PLEs. Knowing that, you know, like you're probably going to get pretty good wrestling and you're probably going to get some significant storyline development. But my main interest going in was more so on Stephanie McCour and Julia teaming up against Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade. That had the bulk of my interest, and, you know, just to kind of follow along with some of the rest of the storylines as well.
Yeah, I thought the women's tag was probably either that or the opener with Obafemi and Tony D'Angelo was maybe the strongest match of the show. But and I'm not even talking black and gold era, like just of the 2.0 era up until the present. I thought this special was really on the lower end of NXT ones. Like this totally felt like a very just it was 2.5 hours of wrestling, and I mean, you got some storylines on this show. It wasn't as though it was of no consequence, but I can't say there was any match on this show that is, go out of your way to see this match. It sort of just felt like this show ended and was like, all right, that was 2.5 hours. The big angle at the end, which they played up all throughout the show, they had Bubba Ray with Dave LaGreca doing live hits inside the Giant Center. And on the pre-show, they were interrupted by Ridge Holland. It happened again during the main show. And the closing angle is Trick Williams, who has retained the title over Ethan Page, being attacked by Holland, and Bubba Ray coming to save Trick Williams. Not a sentence I expected to be stating in 2024. But yes, we had in the last week, Christian headlining Dynamite, the Hardys headlining and winning the tag titles the night before at Bound for Glory, and one member of the Dudleys closing an NXT pay-per-view.
Sure, yeah.
Edge cannot be too far from a return.
Yeah, I would say varying degrees of like reception to all of those things, John. Listen, like, just because, you know, wrestlers have been around for over 2 decades doesn't mean that they can't provide entertainment and great value for people for the current generation. And I think given the ECW Arena show coming up, I expected something like this. You expected some, you know, ECW legend to take part. And of the options that are out there, I have always kind of felt like the WWE, you know, has always seen the Dudleys as like among the top tier of like ECW alumni that they can trust and rely on and to get a good reaction from a WWE audience. I guess you do have other options out there, but who would you have chosen from an ECW alumni for this upcoming NXT show?
I mean, of your options,
Bully Ray the best choice if you're WWE?
I think it depends here. Is that, are you looking at this as just some simple one-off for next week, or is there going to be a larger angle here of something of like Bubba does his turn at that you see something longer for a Bubba Ray?
Are you
doing this for a 1 week experiment?
That's what I would assume.
I'll put it this way. Like, they've basically sold out this arena. I don't think they need it for that. Is Bubba Ray going to draw added attention for next week's show? I mean, maybe. If they do some great angle tomorrow to set this tag match up for next week, like, maybe. I don't think this is a big tag match that's going to attract a big audience.
Again, I think a lot of the people who purchased those tickets purchased expecting some form of ECW nostalgia. You know?
And they're getting it with this. And a semi-interesting name from the past in Dawn Marie being added to be the guest referee for Lola Vice and Jada Parker. Now, why it's interesting, I say, for Dawn Marie is because she has not appeared for WWE since 2005, when she was released when she was pregnant. And this was a very controversial cut by WWE in that year. And quietly, Dawn Marie sued the company afterward as well, but she has never been one that's gone public and bashed the company. In fact, in today's update, I do have like an excerpt of her doing an interview earlier this year, and this is after she's asked kind of about the Janelle Grant accusations against Vince McMahon. Like, she's still very complimentary of Vince McMahon, of WWE, and explained why, you know, she sued the company but kept it quiet, and she refused when, after the Benoit stuff, she refused to go on Nancy Grace or any of those shows, even though she would be someone that would have a bone to pick with WWE. It's an interesting relationship she has with WWE, but regardless, this is the first time they have used her for anything in 19 years.
It is interesting, I guess, for that. Now, I mean, a lot of people have sued this company that have come back.
It's kind of a rite of passage when you sue them and then you do business with them. It's
also kind of what happens when, like, they are the biggest game in town and they are sort of the gatekeepers of, like, her legacy, or at least, like, whatever, you know, her wrestling career has been attached to. So, we'll see. We'll see who else shows up, because I'm assuming it'll be just more than Bully Ray and Dawn Marie.
Yeah, I mean, we knew about Bully with he was already attached to the meet and greet, so it made sense that they would shoot an angle with him to incorporate him. But yeah, he will be on Tuesday night's NXT as well to follow up on the angle that they shot on Sunday. SmackDown ratings on Friday. So this was against Game 1 of the World Series.
I want to say full review of Halloween Havoc, of course, from our friends at Up Next. That's out in the free feed right now.
Brandon Davey did a great review of Halloween Havoc, so you can check it out on the free feed there. So SmackDown did 1,418,000 viewers and a 0.43. So even though they were up against the World Series, they were up 3% on both fronts from the prior week. They were second for the night on cable behind the New York Knicks-Indiana Pacers game on ESPN. And then we had Rampage doing 241,000 viewers and a 0.09 in the demo. So they were up 3% in viewership. And if you remember, the prior week, that was their lowest 18 to 49 number ever. So this week, they were up 38%, which sounds really impressive, but you're coming off literally the worst 18 to 49 audience in its history, which I'm sure they will take. 10th in primetime on cable against both the World Series and the Knicks-Pacers game as well. And as I mentioned for NXT, we have Bully Ray appearing. Axiom and Nathan Frazier taking on Cedric Alexander and Javon Evans for the tag titles. Charlie Dempsey will defend the Heritage Cup against Lexus King with William Regal in his corner. Mm-hmm. This is the weirdest stuff we get only in WWE, where William Regal volunteers to Lexus King to be in his corner as his corner man and alludes to the fact that I knew your father and I also know Charlie Dempsey. And then Lexus King just has to, thank you. Thank you so much that you're going to be my corner man. And then Regal does another interview tonight with Kathy Kelly and is asked, how did this all come about with Lexus King? Like, there is no outward acknowledgement that you're cornering against your son. Like, it's just, it's the most bizarre thing. It's like, we're to know this, but we don't know this. We're not going to call it out loud. And Lexus King is just like, oh, this sounds like totally on the up and up. Like, I could not be possibly getting screwed here.
But Charlie Dempsey has acknowledged, like, being a second gen wrestler, has he not?
They do this all the time. It's like, yeah, they don't, it's not like they actively are lying about it, but it's like, this is obviously where this story will move toward, yeah, but it's just such a weird setup that it's like we can't call out the elephant in the room here in any of this setup.
Well, let's see how they resolve this. I would assume you'd get some.
All I'm saying is that if I went to a jiu-jitsu tournament and you're on the other side of the bracket and your father comes to me and offers, hey, if you beat my kid, I'll make you a backyard and I'll corner you. I'd be like, you know what?
Wow.
Mr. Ting, Wing, okay. I don't know about that. I'm not, I don't trust that this is a little fishy here. Did Wei put you up to this?
Well, maybe Lexus King should be a bit more aware.
Okay. And then what else do we have? We have Tatum Paxley against Wendy Chu in a casket match. And Zarya will be in action after her appearance. Both, did you see last week on NXT, a bunch of people missed her appearance at the very end of the show because they cut the feed?
I feel like these past few weeks with NXT debuting on CW have certainly been growing pains as it relates to hitting the target end time for these live broadcasts that have to cut off at 10 o'clock.
I guess they were very good. I heard from somebody at NXT who like literally messaged me the next day. I was like, did you miss Zarya's arrival? I was like, I saw it. I mean, here in Canada, I saw it. It was here. But yeah, I guess plenty of people missed it. But then they re-debuted her on Sunday. And then Adriana Rizzo is going to be she's going to reveal her attacker. So maybe it too is Christian.
Probably not.
Dynamite, Fright Night Dynamite Wednesday. It is this has been a pretty built up show for AEW. Swerve Strickland against Shelton Benjamin, the Bucks against Private Party for the tag titles, Camille against Chris Statlander, Adam Cole versus Buddy Matthews, and Orange Cassidy is going to speak because Orange Cassidy is pissed.
Oh, that he is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is sunglass less Orange Cassidy, okay? So you know he's upset.
All right, all that and more coming up this week. So Wei and I will be back Wednesday night with Fright Night Rewind to Dynamite. Mm-hmm. And as well, Thursday, it's Rewind Away, Money in the Bank 2011, John Cena and CM Punk in Chicago. I had no idea what else was on this card until I went through it today. We have the real main event, with all due respect to CM Punk. It's the Battle of the Behemoths, Big Show versus Mark Henry. With one of the best video packages in history.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Oh God, this is Mark Henry really hitting his peak in this company in 2011. This is right before he wins the title that fall. So wow. this is Mark Henry. Like, it's finally coming together for this guy after a decade. So that's going to be reviewed. And yes, we will talk about the pipe bomb.
We have to, don't we? Also on the show, Christian versus Randy Orton for the World Heavyweight Championship. Alberto Del Rio. The Money in the Bank ladder match featuring Alberto Del Rio, Rey Mysterio, Alex Riley, Evan Bourne, Jack Swagger, Kofi Kingston, The Miz, and R-Truth. So, all right. Interesting. Also, another
Money in
the Bank.
Don't forget the Divas title match.
Oh, of course. Kelly versus Brie Bella. I'm looking forward to that. And the SmackDown Money in the Bank ladder match. This was back when they had two different Money in the Bank ladder matches. Wade Baird, Cody Rhodes, Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel, Kane, Sin Cara, Sheamus, and, of course, Daniel Bryan Danielson.
Yes, before there was Give Divas a Chance, this was a Give Divas a 4-minute pay-per-view match.
Oh boy. All right. Let's talk about it. Looking forward to it.
That's Thursday. Rewind away. Check it out. Version 168. And you know what? The Post Wrestling Cafe, it's a great deal, and we're all about great deals here at Post Wrestling.
Right about now is probably when many of you are stressing about those end-of-year travel plans. Don't make things tougher for yourself by waiting till the last minute to consider data options for your phone. Hunting for SIM cards at the airport is time-consuming, while roaming fees from your home provider can be expensive. There's a much better option for international data these days, and that's with an eSIM service like Saily. Saily provides mobile data in 160 countries at affordable prices. It's easy to install, and you could do it right from home. Just download the app on your eSIM-enabled phone, pick a data plan that suits your needs, and follow the steps to install. No more swapping SIM cards or worrying about surprise charges. Saily plans come with 24/7 chat support if you run into any issues. Plus, since it's created from the team behind NordVPN, you can feel secure about your connection. To get an exclusive 15% off your Saily purchase, go to saily.com/postwrestling or download the Saily app and use code POSTWRESTLING at checkout. The link is in the description of this podcast. Stay connected and travel smart this holiday season with Saily. Huge thank you to our new sponsor, Saily. Welcome aboard.
Yes. If there's one thing we are very adamant about here at Post Wrestling, it's down with geo-blocking. Okay. We've got you in mind, the listener.
Yes. Yes. And saving money when you're traveling with your data, of course.
That's all. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe some of you had an affordable data plan in Hershey, Pennsylvania, if you were taking in back-to-back nights of WWE programming. Tonight, WrestleTix reporting almost 7,800 tickets distributed. And tonight, going up against Game 3 of the World Series involving the Dodgers and the Yankees, which the Dodgers are currently up. And they could, if they win tonight, they could end the series tomorrow. So it is noteworthy. Dynamite would avoid Game 5 if the Dodgers can sweep the Yankees. We will see, but don't count out the Yankees. So we go into a recap of last week's IC title change. Interestingly, no Bron Breakker on tonight's show.
Interesting. Yeah. I guess when you have a two-hour show, things get cut off.
You brought this up last week, sort of like the feel of Raw on a CM Punk-less, Drew McIntyre-less Raw. Tonight, I really found your big star was Jey Uso and I guess Damian Priest at the end of this. Like, it was like you had essentially no Gunther. It was limited to like one video. No Punk, no Drew, no even Bron Breakker following up from last week. It just felt like this was a 2-hour Raw. I'm not going to say this 2-hour Raw drag because I made a promise at the beginning of this 2-hour era. But
it was a 2-hour Raw where at the end of the main event, I was almost really surprised to see the signature pop up because it felt like we had at least, I don't know, a few more segments before ending the show.
And a closing match / segment with zero impact on the pay-per-view for this go-home show. Like,
sure.
None of these key people involved at all for Saturday's show. So I just really, I could not have fathomed this show at a 3-hour clip.
You would have had another hour of content, I imagine.
That number one contenders tag match might have gone an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jey Uso comes through the crowd, and he speaks about getting his retaliation on the Bloodline on Friday, and there is one Uso he wants to speak with, and out comes Jimmy, who thanks Jey for what he did on SmackDown. They need to be together to take down Solo and the Bloodline. They aren't the ones. But Jay says, neither are we. I haven't seen you since WrestleMania. I guess forgetting the last number of appearances Jimmy has made on Raw trying to talk to this guy. But let's cast that aside. In all honesty, I would have thought that Jimmy and Jay would have both wanted to cast aside that WrestleMania match.
Oh, right.
Let's not remember that. Let's not pretend that was anything approximating good. They fought each other, and a lot has happened, and they don't mix us up anymore. Still maybe was the best Jey Uso line in terms of kicking off this entire transformation 4 years ago when he uttered that line. And he became a champion on his own, but none of those titles top being your twin brother. I mean, I was cheering up here. But then he rejects a hug from his twin brother and says, we still need to fix stuff. I think this guy listened to all of Way's criticisms on Rewind to SmackDown Friday night. It's like, listen, we're not going right back to the hug, even though we did get the hug on Friday. We are no longer yes men. We're not sidekicks any longer. We are our own men. So Jimmy invites Jay to come to SmackDown this Friday to speak with the tribal chief and squash the beef. Jimmy goes so far, he promises that Roman will be there. And you know what? I'm never one to take someone for his word. I think 100% Roman Reigns is going to be there on SmackDown this Friday.
I would take that bet. Sure. Yeah.
This is a taped episode, by the way, that we are building up to on Friday. And that's
okay. Got it.
This is very weird. Like, Jay had to, like, you're going backwards here because all of this has been taped for Friday. But Jay agrees to come on Friday because he already did. And the Tongans storm the ring to attack, and the Usos are fighting them. Solo then sends in Jacob Fatu, and they have the numbers advantage, and they put a chair around Jay's neck into the corner. Fatu goes to run at him, but Jay gets up, throws the chair into Fatu. Jimmy breaks free after being tied in the ropes, and they super kick party their way to freedom, sending the Bloodline to the floor, and thus concluded like a 17-minute opening segment with the Bloodline / Usos.
I enjoyed it. When we're speaking about maybe star power on these shows, I think the more Bloodline drama you could get on any of these shows, it'll probably be very, very welcome. And I have to assume maybe it'll be somewhat reflected when we see the quarter hours. I thought the segment was great. You know, it filled in a lot of those gaps about Jay's motivation that you and I were talking about that was missing on Friday. He spelled out things pretty clearly for the viewer. I would say we are going to try this Bloodline thing again, but this time we're not servants to Roman. We're not even just twins. We're individuals now. So it's telling the viewer what is going to be different and why Jey Uso is willing to give this family another chance, provided that they can all change, or at least Roman and Jimmy can show that they're able to change as well. So, you know, this is a family that's like fought a lot. They, at least for Jay, it seems like they've gotten that out of their system. Jay's ready to move on, and there's just something so captivating about seeing all of this drama play out. And I'm glad that we're getting it both on Raw and SmackDown.
Then we had, again, some editor that was assigned, you know what, guys? We need some content from WrestleMania. Like, well, what if we could pick up the audio on all the main eventers from WrestleMania? So we get a sneak peek of The Rock, Roman Reigns, Cody's mother, all these people that were mic'd at WrestleMania, and they will run this entire video on Friday on YouTube. Now, let's give them the benefit of the doubt here. They said it'll be released on Friday. They never said this Friday. So this could be in 3 months, like behind the curtain, okay, where they did make the mistake of saying this Wednesday.
Yeah. Is Dwayne Johnson going to watch every frame of this and approve every single one of it?
Okay. This could come out in February.
Yeah.
So let's not hold our breath. But this was supposedly coming up Friday. I'm sure this is interesting to some people. I cannot imagine sitting down for this, what was like a 45-minute main event.
I don't think they'll show the whole match, right?
Yeah, it'll probably be an edited down version. You're right.
Yeah, like just of the interesting things. I mean, but it still kind of stands that, like, I don't care that much about this anymore. Like, it's what we're half. Well, Jay told us it was half a year ago, right?
we're all different people now.
Unless something incredibly controversial is said here, and everybody starts talking about it, like, you know, what if, like, I don't know, What if The Rock's mom said something really, really, really mean at Dustin? Or Cody's mom, I guess. Cody's mom was there, right?
Well, it's not like Hulk Hogan was here. So, I mean, I don't think there could be anything too inflammatory.
I do think it's a neat idea, especially when we're talking about just like, I don't know, online content. Like, think about the hours and hours and hours and hours of footage that's out there that'll never see the light of day. Especially now without the network, without any actual show, you know, that just like, even justifies, you know, putting the stuff up there.
Between it's this WWE Vault channel on YouTube. Exactly. That's where it goes. Okay. Yeah. That's where this stuff goes.
Well, feels like it's a higher profile version of that, you know, just, or at least that philosophy. Let's just like, what's the cool shit that's here that nobody has ever seen before that we could throw out there, make a little bit of money on it. And I would say this qualifies. Here's some extra audio from people that have never seen of this match.
Yeah. Maybe we should start our own clip channel and we'll just include like our pre-show discussion where my mic's not working and you workshopping me through fixing my mic.
That's
coming right. This Friday.
Sure. Yes. You know, some things are better left unpublished.
They promoted that the on sale for WrestleMania, they're calling this the best selling WrestleMania on sale weekend in history. So, the current get-in price is just under $900. That's the cheapest. These are the two combo tickets that you can only buy at this point. So it's a hot ticket at the moment.
Mm. Okay. Thank
Pierce
you.
Is on the phone with Nick Aldis screaming because they only agreed to allow Jimmy on Raw tonight, not the rest of the Bloodline. And then Judgment Day walk in to find out who will be Dominic's opponent tonight because he is going to be facing a former world champion. And no curiosity, no build this up till the main event. He's just like, it's going to be Damian Priest. And Dominic says, well, I know all his tricks. And Balor warns him to be careful. There's a reason we called him Punishment. Like, yeah, because that was his name before he got here. And Dom asks them to stay back here tonight, which none of them did. Ludwig Kaiser against Sheamus was our first match of the show. We got reminders of their past matches this year. There was the June 20th Classic, and then there was the August 5th follow-up. I mean, you remember those dates. That's, you know, like it's Misawa Kawada here. So Kaiser hits a discus lariat and drop kicks Sheamus to the floor. They each take turns ramming each other's shoulder into the post. And then Sheamus goes for a powerbomb on the desk, but Kaiser snaps on a guillotine and gets run into the steps for Sheamus to break free. We come back, and after a knee strike on the floor, Sheamus hits the 10 beats, a flying clothesline off the top, and then Kaiser ends up with a powerbomb out of the corner, hits the PK for two. Sheamus fires back with chops, a pump knee, and brogue kick to get the win in 9 minutes and 48 seconds, adding October 28th to Joe Tessitore's notes. And I just thought there was a consistency throughout this show where it was like, once these matches started, this crowd just kind of just sat. And they watch these matches, and it's not like I wouldn't say any of these matches were like poor or underwhelming, but it just felt like they were having like a nice match and no one was reacting to it.
Right. Yeah. And I was asking myself whether or not it was due to the quality of the match or the crowd tonight. I will say I did feel like I came out of at least their last match, maybe even the one prior, but it was in June, so like I certainly don't remember.
Yeah, don't talk shit about August 5th, okay? You didn't like the August 5th match? I'm surprised. I thought you'd like August 5th more than June 14th.
I'm going to have to ask this notebook AI, you know, how I felt about the August match. So, but I recall feeling pretty good about it, or at least like liking it more than maybe this one, or reacting to it a bit stronger than this one. This one just kind of feels like it came and went. Even the anticipation, I don't think was that well built up for this one. You know, like I know they did a segment last week, but here we're just kind of coming in cold. Like this was a rubber match, you know, and I think it deserved, if they were going to treat this feud seriously, maybe some video package or something like that, just to kind of refresh us on like what's really at stake. But evidently this match ended. There's really nothing at stake, you know, like he beat Kaiser. Okay, let's cut to the next segment. Like there's really nothing's really resolved. And, you know, overall, I just didn't really feel like I even cared about this.
And I know that Friday, it's a taped SmackDown, it's a TV main event, but like the timing of this, like this match did not need to happen now. And Kaiser is in this main event on Friday, teaming with Gunther against Orton and Cody, and it's like, yeah, obviously Kaiser is there for a reason, but it's like, do we have to just beat him clean here to like right before the show that he is in a main event position for?
But what's the alternative? Having beat Sheamus only for Kaiser to lose?
Do this match next week. Like, what was so pressing about this week?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, so then you would have complained about him losing twice then.
No, because you're not building him for a main event after the Sheamus match.
Right. Okay.
Again, it doesn't matter. It's a small thing. Rhea Ripley does a video addressing Raquel Rodriguez, and she says she was betrayed out of malice. She basically says that, okay, I understand your criticisms that you're only doing what I did, but you were malicious. Everything I've done was deserved.
Okay.
That's okay. When you ripped Liv's shoulder out of the socket, was that was deserved too, right? When you were a heel? Yeah. I was trying to make sense of her trying to make sense of this. So she
Have you seen Adam Cole and MJF? Have you seen some of those explanations that we've had to accept?
She explains, this is a world of shades of gray, and sometimes you got to get dirty with to get even with the villain. She does admit, I've made mistakes in the past. So that covers every storyline inconsistency.
That's all you have to say.
That's it. I've made some mistakes in the past. Yeah. And all she cares about is winning her title back. And you'll have to kill me to stop me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're building up to a loser must die match.
But yeah, notable by her absence.
Mm. Yeah. 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 It's and by the way, next week is the Raw in Saudi Arabia that they are sticking around with.
I guess so. That is the reason why a lot of talents might not be on this one, you would think, right? Because they're doing so much traveling.
I don't know if anyone's left this early because the show isn't until Saturday. It's not like they have shows beforehand.
But
I mean,
more so just to give them a break before like a long flight and everything.
It could, yeah. But then there's others here that
didn't.
Yeah, I mean, who on tonight's show is actually on that show this week?
Yeah.
Like there was
who,
like the just the Usos, really.
Okay, so that I would suggest that's probably the main reason, you know, to split the crew so that.
Although, you're doing Raw next week. I would think most of these people are going to be on Raw next week. Like you're probably flying over quite a significant amount of these people.
Extra reason to give them tonight off.
No, I'm saying the ones that were on tonight's show, even though they're not booked on the pay per view, they're probably going to be on Raw next week.
Okay, so but they get to stay home over the weekend.
All right.
No, let's talk this out. Like, what's the confusion?
I'm arguing that, like, there's still people on this show that are still going to have to make that trip. So whether you were on the pay-per-view or not, you're
saying the people that are working tonight have to come back next Monday to do the show, right?
I'm just saying, like, all these people are probably headed to Saudi Arabia, like a huge percentage of them.
Oh, okay. Even though they're not on the card?
They could be on Raw next week. Like, it's not just going to be...
Oh, because Raw is in Saudi, yes.
Yes, yes,
okay,
that's
gotcha.
What I'm saying.
Understand. Yeah, well, we'll see. Maybe a lot of them aren't.
We will find out. The Usos are backstage, and they run into Sami Zayn. So this is Zayn's first appearance since losing the match to Gunther. So he's been off for several weeks, and Zayn wants to speak to Jay alone. And he has this awkward interaction with Jimmy, and then he asks Jay if this is it, and everything that Roman and Jimmy did to you, you're just going to forgive them for that, and explains how at least Solo didn't mentally get into your head. And Zayn explains, I'm not on anyone's side but yours. And he doesn't need, and says, Jay, you don't have to pick a side either. This is not your fight anymore. And Jay says, Sammy, you wouldn't understand because you're not family.
I love this shit. I love it. I mean, I enjoy Sammy and Jay. I enjoy Sammy by himself. I enjoy Sammy and Jay's interactions on their own. But there's just something so much more special when they are a part of a bigger narrative regarding the entire rest of the bloodline. I miss this, you know. So we've now kind of resolved like the Jay side of this story, where Jay is seemingly willing. He's getting back with Jimmy. He's willing to talk things out with Roman. Now we focus on Sami Zayn and that sort of unresolved loose end, you know. And they're giving enough focus and time to all of these characters. You know, we've told the Jay story. We've kind of, yeah, I feel pretty satisfied in like getting there. It's still not completely solved, but like, you know, we're on our way. Sammy's starting off from an even farther place, it feels like, you know, where he's not entertaining the idea at all. Can't even stand being in the same room with Jimmy. Give him a week, okay? Now, you know, just like with Jay, you know, within a week, I think, you know, people just kind of get back into place. But yeah, the Sammy chapter, I think, could be the best of all. You know, the Sammy arguably is the best, like, performer in terms of acting among the several of them, and the Sammy and Roman have been through, you can argue, even more together, so seeing those two patch that up, that it's going to be a great story, I think.
Now, with this image that you just had, was it a missed opportunity to not have Jay and Sammy here, and then you pull focus and it reveals the word brothers above them?
Oh,
and that's how the scene ends.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe they chose this particular spot for a reason.
Yeah. I thought this was really good stuff on this show, on a show that really did feel kind of like a kind of paint by numbers raw. This was like, and with good reason, you leaned heavily on the Usos and Sami Zayn with multiple segments tonight.
Yeah.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, beginning with New Japan's Sakura Genesis from April of 2017 and the highly controversial match between Kazuchika Okada and Katsuyori Shibata. Later this month, we'll go back to October of 1987 with WWF's Saturday Night's main event on NBC, including title matches between Hulk Hogan and Sika, Honky Tonk Man against Randy Savage, and the Hart Foundation facing the Young Stallions. The month rounds out with WWE's Money in the Bank 2011. With CM Punk challenging John Cena for the WWE Championship in Chicago after the pipe bomb promo. Plus, Karen Peterson presents a special show focusing on the Queen of Villains on Netflix, weekly editions of Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course, ad-free shows, news and audio updates sent directly to your email, and so much more beginning at $6 per month, which provides instant 30-day access and extensive archives going back to 2017. PostWrestlingCafe.com. Gunther video addressing Cody Rhodes, a face to wall segment, calling him the quarterback of WWE, the golden boy of this generation. He calls him gutless and he drags those closest to him into this mess, this time being Orton, to preview the tag match on SmackDown, and that he will choke out Orton and Cody will awaken to realize that he's a secondary champion to Gunther. Nothing new that Gunther has not said in any of his other promos, and nothing like this home run segment from Friday.
Well, it was essentially a recap of, you know, the incredible segment from Friday, and they could have just like replayed it, but instead they gave us like this sort of like nice looking wallet, you know, him speaking into just the distance.
Yeah, they're like, Gunther, can you give us the 60-second version of that promo from Friday, because we're going to run that on Raw. So that was the whole involvement of Gunther. And then it was time for Zelina Vega with Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro in her corner, taking on Ivy Nile, who is accompanied by American Maid. So we had the MAGA light group. Do you think we're kind of just like, we're trying to
I'm not
to make
really
something
doing it at all. Like, I think you've been, you know, like hammering that home a little bit more than I have.
You don't think that there's subtleties to this group? Am I looking for something that's not there?
So, I definitely think that they are aware of it. Whether or not like that's directly what they're aiming for, it's hard to say. Like the stereotype of, I guess, like these sort of douchebaggy, like flag waving dudes existed before MAGA, you know. So if you ask them, they probably say that they weren't. I mean, yeah, there's probably maybe something to it, just given current times.
Certainly, in another era, if they had had this match, and you have the, I'll put it, MAGA light taking on the...
Even that's, like, I don't know if you want to... We don't know how they vote, you know? We don't know how these characters vote. We can make assumptions, but that's not right. There might be people in the LWO that are Megalite. We don't know.
Well, we're definitely projecting a stereotype.
Yeah, we shouldn't do that.
Okay, well, then shame on us for perpetuating such a thought. I think they're perfectly fine with planting that seed and letting it harvest in people.
They might not even vote. We don't know.
Maybe not.
They might be in Saudi. Like, you know, it would be busy. Too busy.
No. Let's not make anything political then about this group taking on a Puerto Rican in Zelina Vega. with an announcement later to come about Madison Square Garden on this edition of Raw.
What's the announcement?
They're going back. They announced on the show they're running a show at Madison Square Garden in December.
What does that have to do with what we're talking about?
Did you follow the rally at Madison Square Garden over the weekend?
No.
Oh, you're not aware of any of this.
What happened?
You know, when the show is done, just type in.
Let's just do it now. Madison Square Garden.
Type in Madison Square Garden, Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Did you know that Hulk Hogan spoke at this rally?
So. I didn't know. Wow. Okay. So, I mean, I'm only reading headlines here. What Trump's...
You know something, Trump maniacs? I don't see no stinking Nazis in here. Jeez. I don't see no stinking domestic terrorists in here. The only thing I see in here are a bunch of hard-working men and women that are real Americans, brother.
Oh, yes. My.
Yes.
I was unaware.
Yes. And based on the 500 speakers that got up there, it was very welcoming unless you were Puerto Rican, Black, Jewish.
Gotcha.
Yeah, this was quite the rally, to say the least.
Okay. Well, we know this guy is American made.
Yes. You know, he got up here and he could not. I've never seen this before. He couldn't rip the shirt.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
no. He just gave up on it. You know, those pythons, they had too much of a workout for them at Madison Square Garden. How did we get on this? I'm just envisioning my feedback tomorrow. Zelina Vega versus Ivy Nile. Vega has a meteora off the apron to the floor, and then Vega comes back with a stun dog and then climbs to the top for a moonsault off the top. She rotates, and I thought she landed right on Ivy Nile's face. Ivy Nile's like grabbing her face, appeared to be okay here, but she like barely connected here with Ivy Nile. So then Nile hits a bridging German. Vega chop blocks the knee and goes for the code red, but Julius prevents it from happening behind the ref's back. So you have the LWO and American Made fighting on the floor, and Nile introduces a swinging Uranagi to pin Zelina in 6 minutes and 34 seconds.
You know, if only they had played that clip ahead of this match, I think you would have had a bigger reaction from the crowd, because as it existed, there really wasn't much of anything.
In another era, they would have been all over it. Like, this was major like coverage from the weekend, and Tony Hinchcliffe's comment about Puerto Rico. This would have been in another era. They would have been all over this.
I was totally joking. I don't know if they want to be fanning those flames.
They absolutely don't.
I don't know if I want to be exposed to any more of that, you know, in this on my timeline. So anyway, not much reaction to this match.
No.
Doesn't seem like there was much relation to a bigger story either. And I do have my doubts about like how much, like, is this a, so yeah, this is a current feud going on between American Made and LWO. So yeah, okay. So we'll get follow up later.
Jimmy Uso is in the locker room and he asks Jay how the talk went with Sammy. And Jay just tells him, yeah, I told him he's not family. Jimmy agrees with him. Yeah, he's not. These guys are just, they came off as such dicks here to Sammy. And Jay notes that, you know, when you left, Sammy stepped up, and Jimmy is going to play peacemaker. He offers to go find Sami Zayn and go speak to him. And yeah, did bring up the question of Sami Zayn's attendance here at Raw. What was his objective tonight? Was it just to come in and hopefully he'll run into Jay? Because that's a test.
Hold on a second. We know on these shows, you never know when you're going to be booked in the main event. All right, John. Like, half these matches aren't made.
But
until
all
the start
these guys
of the show.
Took off tonight. Like, Gunther knew. It's like, I'm not getting booked. I'm not going to show up for the show.
I guess some guys just aren't eligible. But, you know, Adam Pearce, okay, when he's booking Raw, he leaves these major gaps that are out there for the show that he's just waiting for somebody to come out to call somebody out for so that he would have a main event.
Not tonight's show. He had this all formatted. We had all these matches announced in advance, so there was no room.
Dealing with a limited deck tonight.
Well, they have plenty of time to fill coming up this week. So the Crown Jewel kickoff will be Friday at 1 p.m. Then there will be a countdown show on Saturday at 11 a.m., 2 hours of talking before the pay-per-view.
No matches, you don't think, for this one? Because last year, I believe there was a kickoff match.
Well, they've got 7 matches for the pay-per-view. I guess there's always that possibility they could throw something onto that.
Do we have any like Saudi celebrities that want to like, you know, do a segment, the comedian or something?
Well, Paul Levesque did tweet about the artists that are performing the theme song, the one that sounds like Macarena.
I don't know. Don't know.
Maybe that comedian will be back.
That's what I just said.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't listening. Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe he will pop up. I guess that's possible.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
I don't know if you can fit in a match though. They're like, you do have a lot of talking. Like, you only have 2 hours, so
7 is about how much they had last year. So yeah, it's a lot.
Rollins is out to start the second hour, and he is hunting for a monster, but he has awoken the monster within him as well, Seth freaking Monster, and Reed appears on the screen. He's in the parking lot, and he promised Adam Pearce not to cause any chaos, so he challenges Seth to come out and brawl in the parking lot. So a promise not upheld. So Rollins heads out, and they have quite a fight out in the parking lot where Rollins ends up swinging a door into Reed's head and then stomps him onto the hood of a car. But Bronson rises from the dead, and then they fight into the production truck, and it ends with Reed launching Rollins out of the truck with a Death Valley driver through a bunch of tables that were strategically placed right in front of this production truck. And
strategic? What are you talking about? Come on, you this stuff. The truck needs a table for all the stuff to go on.
Yeah, with curtains over it too. That's usually how my tables right next to a production truck outside in the cold.
You need a place to store all your empty cardboard boxes and wrapped cables and landing bat crash pad. Where else are you going to put that stuff?
Well, Sean Daivari was here to the rescue, and Seth Rollins is taken to hospital with having his back evaluated.
It was a really fun spot, I thought. You know, and they're trying right now to they now have the Bronson Reed playbook, and that's to just like go outside of the arena to do crazy.
It's the old Braun Strowman playbook.
Yeah, I guess so.
Which always did really like well on YouTube was those videos, especially with vehicles with Braun Strowman, where he just did crazy stuff. And it usually got over when he did crazy, like tipping over vehicles.
Yeah, yeah. There was something so incredibly magical seeing two giants be able to pull off these spots. I sense it might even be a little bit more challenging to make it spectacular using a smaller person. But like, I think they've managed perfectly fine here with Seth Rollins. They created like that, like a really special feeling to these shows or to these segments. And they're actually adding variety to the rest of the show.
The Miz is speaking with Karrion Kross that they have to go their separate ways. Kross is not going to let them go their separate ways and says, one of my guys just took a bullet for you and proposes an alliance. So, again, I thought this was the end of Paul Ellering last week, and this seemed to confirm it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so.
R-Truth is with Otis, Tozawa, and Maxine and are approached by The Miz. And Miz apologizes profusely to R-Truth. I've seen the error in my ways, and Maxine's warning him, don't listen to him. So Miz insults them, and Truth says, I've got this. And he pretends to accept the apology, but then drills Miz and tells him, good luck with the Wyatts. Y'all gonna die. And then as he walks past Pete Dunne, he says, what's up, Butch? You seen Pete?
So what was he doing here?
This whole segment was a reminder that Tozawa, Otis, Maxine, and Pete Dunne all still circulating in this universe of Raw.
Hey, listen, there are main event tapings, there are dark matches, speed matches, okay? A wide number of things that these guys could be doing. So, .com exclusives, you know? More than just one way to have purpose on these shows.
Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee against the New Day and the War Raiders, the finals of our number one contenders tournament. Finally, we have reached. The War Raiders are overpowering everybody at the beginning, and they launch Dragon Lee onto everybody on the floor. Come back from break, Rey sends Eric out with a head scissors, and Xavier Woods is gaining control. Kingston wants a tag, and Woods is getting booed as he yells, "I'm trying to win the match." So Ivar then drops Woods with a clothesline, and now he does make the tag to Kofi. Ivar ducks a Trouble in Paradise, so Kofi ends up hitting a double. Hits the SOS to Rey, and then Woods is the one to dropkick through the ropes to the floor, and Kingston hits the Trust Fall to set up our second commercial break. Dragon Lee enters. Again, this match was certainly struggling with heat, but Dragon Lee did get the crowd engaged for a period of time. They try for a Tower of Doom onto Kingston and Eric. Then Rey climbs up as well for a top rope run to Eric as Lee completes a sit-up powerbomb to Kingston. Everyone's down. We have all six taking turns. And then Woods ends up working with Kofi, and Kofi wants to hit Daylight onto Dragon Lee. But Xavier Woods gets caught up and focuses on Rey and abandons Kofi to go for a dive, missing Rey and just crashing to the floor. So the quarterback fumbles yet again. Lee hits a Tope Con Hero, taking out Woods. And then Rey sets up for a 619 when he goes to run the ropes. And who should appear but Chad Gable?
Yeah.
The non-politically affiliated Chad Gable going after a Latino and attacking him on the floor with an ankle lock, preventing him from winning. And thus he is taken out of the
match. I don't see color, John, okay?
Yeah, this is, you're right. We are colorblind to the story. Mm-hmm. And so with the War Raiders in control of Kofi, they hit their springboard clothesline into a German, and Kofi is the one to take the pin. So the War Raiders win and will challenge JD McDonagh and Finn Balor, possibly on next week's Raw in Saudi Arabia. You would think that that would be a fine television match to have with them.
Right, yeah. Good action, I thought. You know, effective finish to carry on this New Day story while also building the LWO with American Made and putting the War Raiders into title contention. So a lot was achieved in this one match. You know, several weeks in, I mean, they were doing their best to, I think, give focus to the War Raiders here. But, man, a couple weeks in, I'm still not really feeling it, you know? Like, they're not exactly looking so different from their first run, both in terms of just their, I guess, physical appearance and also just their in-ring ability, nor, like, their characters. I do sense that they need a bigger, like a fresher, more drastic coat of paint than what they've given us so far.
What if they got last names?
Yeah, I don't think that'll matter.
Eric Hansen and, or which one? Eric Rowe and Ivar Hansen.
Eric Rowe and Ivar Hansen?
I'm trying to take their former names and add them to the WWE names.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes such a difference.
What if they become the Peace Raiders? They're no longer about violence.
Oh, okay. And they bring peace? Now, how would they do that in the body of a pro wrestling match?
They'd hold a sit-in.
They would tag in and just hold your hand.
Yeah. Maybe they become like, you know, they take on a grapple-based offense. You know, they don't want to do violence.
Okay.
You
know, all of this just tells me how tough it is to dig out of a hole that's been dug.
This should have been their vignette.
Yeah. Like, it's so hard to overcome like a fucked up several years of their existence. Look at the Motor City Machine Guns, and like in 2 weeks, how great we feel about them versus, I don't know what they could do now with these War Raiders, you know, to make them feel fresh again.
Well, I think these guys are ultimately, I think they're going to have entertaining tag matches in different scenarios. I don't know if they're going to
become... How long before we get the carpool karaoke again?
Well, I mean, there's full circle moments to be had.
You wanted the you wanted the peace raiders. What's more peaceful than singing in a, while driving?
Yeah, eating turkey legs, and maybe one day we will revisit the best of seven sports.
Yeah, we'll see.
Activities with the Street Profits.
Okay, so do you expect? You don't expect a title change? I don't think, right?
I don't rule it out.
I don't rule it out either because, I mean, again, seeing like what they did with Motor City Machine Guns, is a title change the thing that this team needs to?
They're overdue for the tag title. If the Machine Guns got them in 7 days, I mean, the War Raiders, this rebrand has been multiple weeks.
Is it worth giving them the championships to try to, I guess, give them just an extra boost so that this time maybe the War Raiders will actually take?
With the alternative being this tag division, I'm not going to say the tag division doesn't exist because there are teams. It's just they're all battling each other and these champions don't exist. Like Balor and JD, they're off doing their own thing. That's the tag titles, you could take them or leave them. It's like it's not a defining aspect to their characters, to their storylines, that you could easily move them onto the War Raiders and send them off to feud with the Creeds. Like, why not?
It was also a bit of an awkward match for the War Raiders because I sense they are still baby faces if they're going up against Judgment Day. But in this match, they were up against, like, they had to beat up Rey Mysterio, which is sort of a tough task for any.
Yeah, yeah. We had three baby face teams in this. That's a good point.
Yeah. Woods, kind of a tweener, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and with the New Day, when is his anniversary? It's November?
Mm-hmm.
We got to get to that anniversary.
Yeah.
That's why I thought winning this match would make the most sense for the New Day to fail for the tag titles instead of this kind of just being an afterthought of just their latest screw up.
Right.
The Miz is arguing with Adam Pearce about his lack of security, getting attacked by R-Truth. The Wyatts are after him. So Final Testament appear, and Karrion Kross demands that the Miz find Bo Dallas tonight, or else he will break his legs. So I imagine there will be some WWE.com digital exclusive because we never got resolution to this. So either there's a follow-up to this or Miz is in a wheelchair. So he's being bullied to work with the Final Testament, which is kind of art imitating life probably for many yes. people with their internal monologues.
I sense like Miz being a lot more comedic this week than usual. Like in prior weeks, it feels like Miz, you know, he had a pretty serious turn on R-Truth and I would say overall just kind of felt a bit more tonally, I don't know, a little bit more threatening as a villain. This week, he's just kind of the loser trying to not get yelled at by his boss. You know, he's like, oh, man, here comes like Mr. Kross, you know, catching me like dozing off work trying to get out of it. And
this is straight up extortion.
Yeah, I guess so. It's moved on to that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this is like a syndicate, like commit crimes or we'll break your legs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then Jalen Brunson announced WWE returning to Madison Square Garden on December the 26th. So look out for that. Jimmy Uso is seen searching for Sami Zayn and runs into Jay, and they spot Sami Zayn out in the parking lot conversing with Solo Sikoa. Now, why weren't they mic'd? Maybe in 6 months we'll realize what this conversation was all about on the YouTube release.
Very well. Yeah, we could. Where was the wrestling fans? Where were the cell phone cameras capturing it?
Yeah, they did this covertly in Hershey. Maybe they felt that this is the time to have these kinds of discussions.
I think this is interesting. You know, they're not giving us a very straightforward, Jay's sort of reunion has ended up being relatively straightforward. I mean, without having seen what he's going to do with Roman just yet. But with Sammy, they are giving us at least some tease that he might actually be joining with the other side, which I'm sure he will not. But they're at least having the characters think that he will.
Damian Priest against Dominic Mysterio, who had Liv and Raquel in his corner. Dominic attacks right at the bell, but of course Priest takes over. He throws Dom into a barricade, but Dom manages a suicide dive, and then Priest just launches this guy into the desk. Come back from commercial, and the three amigos get stopped with a broken arrow. Priest sets up the South of Heaven, but Dom bails to the floor. So Damian, after sending him into the desk, Liv and Raquel distract the referee, and this allows Carlito and JD to get involved, attacking Priest, but he fights back and starts using a chair on JD, a chair on Carlito, and Then Dominic sneaks up from behind, rolls up Priest, and he pins Damian Priest, getting his future well, now he will be considered for a shot against Gunther. And Priest then drags him back in, razor's edge, more chair shots to Dom, and then he goes to leave, but the straps come down, and he hits a South of Heaven on Carlito and one to Dominic. So he just murdered Dominic afterwards and stood tall, and that was that.
It's interesting booking. Unusual to see Damian Priest lose really at all, much less to, you know, the weakest person in, or one of the weakest people, I guess, in the Judgment Day. So in that sense, like, I kind of like it. It's something interesting. It makes you wonder what they're setting all of this up for. And I guess it would, like, would a Dominic versus Gunther match make sense? Is that something you could see in the future? Near future.
It's a weird match to do.
Be fun.
I guess so.
Like one of those, like, wow, what's going to happen? Like, how are they going to book this type of matches?
Yeah, like, Gunther's going to get cheered in this match to just murder this guy. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, yeah, for a TV match, I can't imagine it being anything bigger than that unless, like, could you do a throwaway match at a, I don't know, I just feel like a... That's not happening at Survivor Series. I couldn't even see that at like a Saturday night's main event.
Yeah, so kind of hard to tell, but like they are promoting this campaign for Dominic's title aspirations. So we'll see where that goes. Is this just another way of getting Priest reattached to the Judgment Day after he's already beaten Finn Balor?
You know? I think ultimately this is like, we know this is going towards Gunther and Priest. So this is probably an avenue for Priest to either get his win back over Dominic or stay attached to the title scene with Dominic kind of as the proxy.
Right. But yeah, afterwards, I mean, for anybody who maybe feels like these sort of matches should not end with the person getting the fluke win, getting destroyed, this was not the match for you because Damian Priest destroy this entire group afterwards. I almost felt it was a bit overkill, John. You know, like, it made this guy look like a sore loser. I mean, you kind of have nobody else to blame. I mean, you could blame the rest of the group, but you know their tactics, Damian Priest. You fell victim to it. Now you're just a sore loser beating them up after the bell.
Yeah, that was this was an odd edition of Raw. I would state that this was one less about any of the matches, and really, I would say the strength of the show was on the Usos and your level of interest in the Bloodline stuff, which I think they have laid out very well, that you have done this tease of Jay and Jimmy getting together, and now the next domino to fall is Sami Zayn, that they should not be revealing yet.
Yeah. If not for the Bloodline story, this would have been just a totally, you know, lame duck edition of the show. I mean, it largely did kind of feel like it was, again, dealing with maybe a lot of, you know, members of the roster that for whatever reason weren't on the show. But, you know, overall, it was a 2-hour show that I don't think, like, if it was a 3-hour show, I think it would have been a lot worse. But at 2 hours, I thought it was fine.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder how prominent Zayn would be featured, because he's not listed for Crown Jewel. And, I mean, he has become arguably their most popular figure in Saudi Arabia, that I would think next Monday, maybe Zayn is in something of prominence for the Monday show, which you do have to stagger your lineups for two shows in Saudi Arabia over the next week.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
So do we want to take a quick look at the last update for Crown Jewel? So we do have Cody Rhodes and Gunther battling over the gigantic championship, which was hand-delivered to the Giant Center tonight. We don't know why. We saw at the beginning of the night they hauled this thing into the arena for no purpose. We never saw it again.
I mean, you know, just to make sure that it's there.
It was there, yes.
Yeah.
Nia Jax and Liv Morgan. We never saw if this championship was escorted to the building, but should we assume it was?
Sure, yeah.
Triple threat, LA Knight, Carmelo Hayes, and Santa, sorry, Andrade. We have Andrade here with Carmelo and LA Knight. Sounds
are we giving our predictions for these, or just like talking about the matches?
I was just looking at the matches. Do you have any any thoughts on the particular championship matches?
Okay, so I can't see a title change, just because, like, man, God help Andrade and Carmelo after going through seven matches and not getting something out of it, you know. So I do think like one of them should actually win the championship, and I could see it being really either Andrade or Carmelo.
LA Knight has literally beat both of them in matches in the lead up to the end of this best of seven series, yeah. And then made both look like just fools in this seventh game. I have not enjoyed any of this lead up. I think LA Knight's just going to retain. I don't feel either Hayes or Andrade have elevated themselves. I don't think they've fallen down, but they certainly haven't risen up from this best of seven series. And I think LA Knight is by far the more popular of the other involved.
I don't disagree with any of that. I just wonder like how much it might hurt either of the two of them to fail at this and not win. So I feel like Carmelo would be my pick.
Four-way match for the women's tag titles with Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill defending. We got Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson, Damage Control and Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. I could very well see a title change in this scenario, because I think they're going to like to do this with Jade and Belair at this point. I think there is a larger question of how far you're going to take this Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair team, because at some point I think Jade is going to have to like sink or swim on her own. And this tag, as much as it's been, I think, to the benefit of Jade Cargill, I think Bianca Belair has, and somewhat you could argue, like, we're not quite at Mania season. It could be strategic that you've had her occupied in the tag division, but you want her in something more prominent on her own. And I do feel like this team, it should have a shelf life, and eventually Belair moving back into a singles role.
Right. Eventually. Now, are we there yet? You know, like, I do see Mania maybe being that destination for this team. So it does still feel potentially a little bit early. Now, who wins the championship, if you think?
I think Unholy Union make this a five-way and win it again. And they always win on international shows and then get forgotten on television. That would be my plan. Uh-huh. To be quite honest, I think it's either the champions retaining or Damage Control end up with the titles. I don't see either of the other two teams winning this, not at all.
I think they retain.
Yeah, as I look at this, I see that as maybe the steadiest direction for this particular program. Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed, I think this match is going to be outstanding. I think this and Cody and Gunther both have the potential to be your top match of the show. But I would say Rollins and Reed, this is a very, very high profile match for Bronson Reed, who has not had too many of them in WWE. And like, he's been here a long time, and this is his chance to break out after what's honestly been an excellent series of like booking of a guy that was totally cold. And with this one angle with Rollins, you elevated him. There was great follow-up, and you have a real player in Bronson Reed. I would go so far to argue that if you're doing this back injury going in, Bronson should win this at least first match that they're having. I don't think this needs to be one and done. But I would certainly have Bronson. I think he needs this a lot more than Seth does.
Right. I mean, I can see both arguments. You know, Seth coming back, I think you want to have him look somewhat strong. I could see the match going with Bronson dominating and then Rollins squeaking by with the victory at the end so that they could get to a rematch and then maybe a rubber match afterwards.
And then rounding out the card, we also have Randy Orton against Kevin Owens and the Bloodline versus the Bloodline, basically. Yeah. So Owens and Orton, I think this needs to be very violent based on the angle that they shot on Friday, that this is a new Kevin Owens. This is a more sadistic Kevin Owens. And there's a bigger match to be had with Cody. You could certainly see Owens wins earlier in the night and then also gets involved with Cody at the end of the night. But I think he needs to not quite go the Brock Lesnar opening up the man's skull route, but a safer, sanitized version of that. And Owens wins in a, or it's like the match is thrown out due to the excessive violence, something like that. I think you need something like maybe even go with blood in this type of a scenario.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see some form of non-finish just to sell like this. Well, for one thing, to protect the both of them, because I think Owen certainly is in a position where you can argue he needs to be protected. You can argue the same about Randy if, you know, his destination is Cody Rhodes, maybe sooner than later as well. And to sell the idea that this guy is so so crazy now, you know, like it's we can't have a finish to this match because he would have done something so dastardly. So I could see that.
Those maniacal Canadians, I mean, can't control them. And then the Bloodline match, I think this is a pretty obvious setup that I think that the like Solo and company need to win this match to necessitate War Games, and that they have the numbers advantage, and Reigns and the Usos, they need another member. I would be stunned. Like, there's almost no reason to come back if you were to have the babyfaces win this one.
Agreed. Like, you're in a position now where you need to establish the heel threat. And, you know, despite, I think, what is it? They won the tag team match, didn't they, recently? What am I thinking of? What did they win recently? The heels.
The heels? I mean, they just Solo. Lost the tag titles on...
Yeah, but didn't Solo get some sort of, like, significant win? With Jacob, it's a long day, everybody. I'm sorry, John.
I'm sorry. I have no idea what match you're referring to.
Okay, maybe I'm
Solo wrong. Recently beat Jimmy Uso a few weeks ago.
Okay,
that was a singles match. Maybe.
Yeah. So I still think you're in a position where you need to continue to establish their dominance, so that you know the baby faces have somebody to beat up, or somebody to aspire to beat up. So yeah, I picked the heels. Gunther and Nia, are those our choices?
Oh, for the first one. Yeah, I see Gunther winning. And for the women's match, yeah, I'll go with, sure, with Nia to win. I mean, really, in the women's match, it's a total coin. Like, I don't see, like, you could argue either one. I don't think it's...
Yeah, there's a Stratton element. There's the Rhea element as well. I mean, you can expect really both of them to.
That's right. They'll probably do. They have to do that cash in tease at some point with Tiffany Stratton. Like, there needs to be a moment where they've kind of set it up where Nia's going to destroy Liv and leave her vulnerable for Tiffany to cash in. So you almost need her to win this match, and then Tiffany. Gets thwarted in some way. And maybe that could be Rhea thwarts Tiffany from cashing in because she wants to beat Liv for that title as well. Like, you don't want to do just blatant run-ins to get out of a finish. And Cody and Gunther, like, I could see two scenarios where it's Owens costing Cody, or you could just do, like, the old NXT bit where it's like right as the show's about to end, that's when Kevin Owens makes his attack on Cody or something like that. But I see for a lot of reasons, like Gunther kind of, you don't want to just beat Cody. Like, there needs to be several layers to necessitate someone beating Cody. And they are not going to be trivial with Cody losses. Like, I would say if he's losing, it's also with the intent that they will revisit this down the road, and not just, you know, it's 50-50 and yeah, we'll flip a coin and give Gunther the win. Like, it needs to be a reason.
Oh yeah, I agree. I think the result of this match, especially if it's Gunther beating Cody, will matter not, you know, next month, but like maybe a year from now when these two find themselves on the same side. To me, like, Gunther versus Cody is a potential WrestleMania program in the future.
All right, we'll be live after Crown Jewel on Saturday. So because of the quick turnaround on Friday, we're not going to do Rewind to SmackDown because it's such an early show on Saturday. So we're just going to come back on Saturday afternoon. That will be on the free feed. We will, though, again, this week on the Cafe, Rewind Away Thursday, Collision Course Saturday night, and the finale of Agatha All Along. We have episodes 8 and 9 dropping this week. So Rich and WH will be coming at you Sunday, a special Sunday edition of MCU Later as they bid farewell to Agatha.
Yeah, reviewing two episodes. It's a double episode drop ahead of Halloween this week. So episodes 8 and 9 is what they'll be talking about. Shall we end with some feedback?
We shall. Why don't you start off?
Let's start off here with Muggin, who says, a decent show that was elevated by the ongoing Bloodline soap opera. Sammy's standing his ground was the logical move, and the tug of war between him and Jimmy took its toll, and it went another level with Sammy and Solo talking in the background. The real confrontation is between Roman and Sammy. Sammy was the first to wake up to Roman's manipulation, and he lit the fuse to the original Bloodline's collapse. It's going to be a real mask off when Roman erupts. Cutting back to 2 hours has really hurt the women's roster. I know NXT will give me my fix tomorrow.
Next up is Jeremy in Texas. So things happened, and Jimmy and Jay are back together with very little courting needed. You just can't keep twins apart. Okay, I'll buy for the sake of the story. At least a forgettable WrestleMania match was mentioned and will probably never be spoken about again with how bad it was. Seeing Sammy confront Jay was logical, and it will be interesting to see where they go from here. An interaction with Kevin Owens and Sammy seems inevitable. You guys talked a bit about this last week. I really hope people have not taken out a second mortgage to pay for WrestleMania tickets. Not to mention you are paying top dollar for two shows. With more two-night stadium shows coming, the next one in the New York, New Jersey market, this trend will probably continue. Will it take poor ticket sales for an event to slow this rising ticket price trend?
Isn't that how dynamic pricing works?
Yeah, like that is what it's going to be. Like, they are going to price these tickets to what enough of the public is willing to spend them on. And again, like Wei and I've gone over this, like, it's are they pricing out a lot of fans? Yes, they are, but that is because they have enough that are fulfilling this demand, and you really cannot fault when demand is this high or a Taylor Swift concert is this expensive or an Oasis ticket. Like, that is just the reality, that if this demand was not being met, yeah, they would curb the demand for the pricing for it.
So Oasis is an interesting point, because they've actually spoken out about dynamic pricing, or at least like something to the effect of like them being kind of regretful that the UK shows were dynamically priced and therefore the North American shows weren't sold with dynamic pricing. Now, I think that's kind of different, because like a band, especially like a rock band, kind of has like a reputation to uphold for, like, you know, like wanting to carve out like a fan friendly relationship. For instance, a company like the WWE, especially under TKO Endeavor, certainly does not have that. At least it doesn't seem like they have that sort of like stain from like this stuff. They celebrate it, and the fans gladly cheer them, applaud them for like making way more money than they ever have. So it's
Oasis also doesn't have like a quarterly earnings report and yeah, markers to meet either. Like, that's just yeah, you should never hold a company to that expectation level. And that's in a nutshell, there's going to be a lot of complaints about these pricing structures. They are only going to escalate. Like that is the new norm. And when live events are generally viewed upon in like this post-pandemic era as something that may have really been underpriced, because now like these big events, they are you could argue if we are able to sell these tickets at hundreds of dollars, should those same tickets be going for $30? Like, the public is telling you, like, this is the entertainment I get out of this. This is the value I see in a major WrestleMania type of event. And ultimately, it is going to come down to enough of people that are willing to spend these exorbitant prices. And then that does become the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Last one is from Ani here. Between the Reed Rollins angle, the Sheamus Kaiser match, the triple threat, and the Bloodline drama, I mostly enjoyed this episode of Raw. However, I had my fill of the Judgment Day, and I found the main event to be stale. How much did it impact your enjoyment of the show?
Hmm. Was the main event stale? I'll say it didn't really feel like a main event to me. You know, like it just, I mean, it felt like a middle of the show type of match. And that's why maybe I was so surprised that we got nothing else afterwards. Yeah, the Bloodline stuff is the main event. That's what I, or at least the biggest hook of this particular show, the Judgment
Day. I didn't even think this was like a heavy, like, Judgment Day show in comparison. Like,
right.
It was largely contained to the opening segment and... Mm-hmm. Then that was
even within the Judgment
sorry,
Day.
Sorry, for the main event segment, I should
even
say.
Within the Judgment Day, the A story is Rhea versus Liv Morgan. You know, it's not whatever's going on with Damian Priest and Dominic Mysterio. So, yeah, like in that sense, this did feel a little bit lacking. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. We're going to say goodbye. So thanks to everyone for tuning in for Rewind to Raw. Tuesday night, up next is live minutes after NXT on CW with Braden Harrington and Davey Portman. Pollock and Thurston is coming at you Wednesday at 1 Eastern, and then Rewind a Dynamite Wednesday night after Fright Night Dynamite from Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. And then that's when we switch over to the Post Wrestling Cafe with a bunch of shows taking us from Thursday over to the weekend, including our review of Money in the Bank 2011, CM Punk versus John Cena. All right. Maybe one of the most famous matches in WWE history.
There you have it. Put your money in the bank right now, or you should be withdrawing it. And then $6 a month gets you into the Post Wrestling Cafe. So check out all of that and much more.
Hey, Bound for Glory review right now in the cafe as well from John Pollock and John Cena.
That is right. We got live feedback from B Detroit, who attended live in Detroit. Apparently, parking was horrendous at Wayne State Fieldhouse in Detroit. But yes, we went through that show. Several noteworthy matches to report back on from that show at Bound for Glory, including Full Metal Mayhem headlining the show in 2024. Uh-huh. So all something right. else with the Hardys winning the tag title. So that's up on the cafe as well. All right. Thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll speak with you later this week.
Without VA, I would have paid $25,000 for my hospital stay,
$42,000 for my education,
$74,000 for my home down payment. But because of my service, I paid zero.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.